So now I think time for, not much time, time for the talk about the values and attitudes for happiness and success. So this is important subject. It's a subject actually that is really, you know, the whole search for people, for all beings actually, isn't it? Does everybody here want to be happy and successful? I can't imagine many people saying, "No, no, not me." Because this is a very basic emotion actually for all beings, not only human beings. You see it, you know, this happiness, this search for happiness. The search for happiness, what is happiness? It's basically a pleasant feeling. This is what happiness is, due to different states of mind. But happiness is a search for this pleasant feeling, and also to let go of unhappiness, to unpleasant feelings of body and mind. And in fact, when we let go of unpleasant feelings in the body, if you've been sick and then you're well, that's happiness, that's great relief. And it's the same with the mind. If we've had bad mind states, negative mind states, and then we let go of them, it's a great relief, and there's happiness there. So they dance around each other, happiness and unhappiness. But one of the definitions I like of about talking about happiness, how happiness is developed, comes from Ajahn Brahm. And this was something he just said in a talk. And every Wednesday night at the monastery we have a talk, and it was just part of the talk, but it really stood out for me. He said at that talk, "Happiness is liking what you have, not having what you like." So that is, happiness is liking what you have, whatever your situation in life is. And it's not having and not liking, not having what you like. So, of course, we all want many things. We like many things in our lives. But if we really want to be happy, then if we can like what we have, appreciate what we have, that is a source of contentment and happiness, actually. And we can be happy anytime, anywhere, if we have that understanding. This is an interesting thing for human beings, and it's very true not only of happiness but the whole of the spiritual path, even Maitri. You know, we say Maitri is a feeling, isn't it? We're aiming at the feeling of Maitri. But there's a lot of wisdom that goes with it, a lot of understanding that we have to have to develop Maitri, to develop happiness. You know, and the more understanding we have, the deeper the Maitri is, and also the deeper our happiness is. And of course, in psychology, I think Freud called it the pleasure principle. You know, the fact that all beings, you know, will go for pleasant feelings, for happiness, and will avoid pain, mental pain, physical pain at all costs. And in fact, for human beings, this is one of the sources of suffering, isn't it? The fact that we fear pain, mental or physical pain. And it causes a lot of suffering for people, actually. And if we were to drop that fear of pain, and the pain were just to be there, whatever it is, it's much more bearable. We can live with it. So we might not like it, but we can live with it. So this is an important part of all beings' lives, actually. And of course, there are different types of happiness, and the types of happiness that most of us know, of course, the physical happinesses of the senses, seeing nice sights, videos, going traveling to beautiful places, hearing music, nice conversations, tasting, of course. This is a big one for food and drinks and so on, and also smelling and touching. We've also the body, the feelings in the body, massage and all these sorts of things that we all know those sorts of feelings. But of course, the most important types of feelings are the mental feelings, and these are the source. This is a source of happiness for sure. You know, people, you know, if they have nice food, they feel happy for that time. Very short-lived, usually, but they feel happy for that time. But those sorts of happinesses have their drawbacks, as we all know, because, you know, if, for instance, if you like food, that's fine, but it can cause you a problem. You can become overweight, you can develop diabetes if you've got a very sweet tooth, we say in English, sweet tooth, and many other problems. So you can see that these physical happinesses, these sources of happiness from the body, from the senses, they have their drawbacks, their limitations. And anybody that can experience them, lots of physical pleasure, eventually they get tired of it, actually. I think they often get bored with it. So. But the most important happiness is, of course, what are they? The mind, from the mind. And these include, you know, even things like satisfaction, you know, achievement in our work, a sense of completion, those things. But it's also metta, you know, and we can have mudita, gratitude that I've mentioned. And we can also, generosity is a very good one too. If you give to other people, give to yourself too. This is a source of mental happiness as well. So these are very important areas. And it's good to distinguish between the body and the mind, because the real happiness is in the mind. Because one of the very important things, I think when you contemplate it, it's very easy to see, where does happiness come from? Does it come from outside to inside? No way. One of my teachers, she used to say, there's no hole to push happiness through. It's coming from inside, going out. So this is an important thing to remember. And it reminds me of one of my favorite stories from, you may know it, from Nasruddin. Have you heard of Nasruddin? He was they say he was a real person, but it's, you know, a bit of a grey area. He was a Sufi, lived in Turkey, and he was a bit like, in Islam, the Zen of Islam. And he was one of these people who did many crazy things and said crazy things, but they had a point. If you contemplate it, you think, oh, yeah, that's good. And one story about him I like is, one evening he was outside his house under the streetlight, and he was looking on the ground. He was, you know, looking all around, and one of his neighbors came and said, oh, Nasruddin, what are you looking for? And he said, the key to my house. And his friend, and they said, oh, I'll help you, have a look. And so they looked around, and they couldn't see anything. And then the friend said, as people usually do, do you know where you lost the key? And Nasruddin said, yes, I know where I lost the key. He said, where did you lose it? He said, inside the house. He said, why are you outside the house? He said, the light's better here. And we're very similar, actually. We're looking outside our house, outside the body, the mind, for our happiness, you know, in the senses. And this is the light, we go to it. And this is a very good point that this story has. And I really like that story, because it just points to our predicament very well. And the key, what's the key, do you think? For me, the key means happiness. That's the key we're looking for. And we're looking for it usually in the wrong place, but nevertheless. So this is a sort of example of looking for happiness in the right place. And just to move on a little bit, because there's not much time now, so just to talk about, we're talking about values and also attitudes for happiness, because these are the things that really condition happiness, allow happiness to arise, because we cannot be happy as such, but we can create the causes for being happy, you know, and then that happiness will come. So some of the causes, of course, you know, are our behavior, aren't they? This is part of values, it's like ethics. So this is quite an important thing for our happiness, because if we're not happy about what we're doing and saying, the way we're interacting with other people, with the family, with work, or with ourselves even, then the happiness is very difficult. We have to feel good about what we're doing and saying. And so this is a very important area to address. Because then we will have like a clear conscience, we'll know we're doing okay, we're doing well. This can give rise to confidence and happiness and success. Because then we feel, you know, oh, I'm doing the right thing, you know, I don't have to worry. So that's good. Also, one of the things that I remember very much is that actually good ethical behavior is actually can be part of successful business too. I don't know if you know of the Quakers in England. The Quakers, they were like a Protestant Christian group that were quite mystical in a way, quite mystical. And they had this philosophy of that of God in every person, which is quite a nice idea, really, and it's good. And they were, in England, they were persecuted quite a lot. They couldn't work in the government, they were imprisoned quite a lot. This is from the 1650s. And so they went into business. And they were very successful in business. And even if you don't know much about the Quakers, I'm sure you've heard of Cadbury's. That was one of their businesses. Fry's is another chocolate company, and Roundtree. And there are many other Quaker companies. And they were very good. Why? People knew they could trust them. Whatever they said they were going to do, they would do. You know, because they had very good ethical standards. And so this is an important thing even in business. Because business, as in all communities, what's the most important thing in business? For business to flourish? Is trust. There has to be trust that, you know, this is really the case. You know, what the person is telling me is what is really the situation. So it is a very important thing. So this has repercussions. And I always think one of the best, for me, this I use this quite a lot for myself, for ethical behavior of body and speech, is I think, what I am saying or what I'm doing, would I like to hear this from somebody else? So if I put myself into the picture, if I think, well, no, I don't think I'd like to hear this, or I don't think I'd like someone to do this to me, then, you know, it can mean that I refrain from it, or I say it or do it in a different way. So this is very good, because often we separate ourselves, don't we, from other people. But if we put ourselves in their place and think of what we're saying and doing, that can be a very good way to guide our behaviour and our speech. So this is just one of the simple reflections one can use. I also, you know, I often think, is what I'm doing and saying, is it beneficial? Is it useful? This is something that's quite helpful too. So you can have many sort of reflections like this. But one of the areas that I think is very important for happiness is some of the attitudes that we have, some of the views we have. This is an area that I think often we don't investigate our views. Often some of these views we've got from childhood, and we don't look into them. But one of the important things in life for happiness is balance, isn't it? Balance in our lives. And this is something in the modern world, with life getting faster and faster, that there is less balance actually. We get caught up. So the balance I'd like to think of it, and the Buddha talked about it as the middle way. not going to the extremes, you know, of either in the Buddha's, the way the Buddha was talking about it, was of torturing the body or of indulging the body, but it also applies to the mind as well. So this balancing, we can think of it in terms of the body, you know, to not indulge the body but not to torture the body. Indulging the body leads to a lot of health problems. Torturing the body is very unpleasant anyway. So middle way, and the middle way is always exercise, using our wisdom, our understanding to guide the way we use our body and the way we treat the body, because this is our vehicle for this life. So very important. And it's the same with the mind. We need to give the mind some rest. We need to help the mind reduce negative emotions. And this is where mindfulness and meditation are very useful as well. So that's one important area. The other important area that I think for happiness, and this is vital actually for human beings, is to have meaning, is to have purpose in your life. If we don't have meaning or purpose in our lives, we can get depressed. We can think, what's the point? Why go on? You know, we all need some meaning and purpose. And this is where spiritual life is actually very helpful, because it gives us a framework of meaning and purpose. And you find that people who don't have much meaning or purpose, their lives, well, they will tend to get depressed. But I remember reading a book about people in the concentration camps in Germany, and in this was written by a psychologist who was in, a Jewish psychologist, who was in the concentration camps. And he said, some people, you know, if they had a meaning and purpose in their life, they could continue living there, they could survive. And he gave an example of one man. He had an idea the war would end in March 1945 or something. And it didn't end. He was certain it was going to end. It didn't end. And very soon after that, he died, because his purpose finished, his meaning finished. And we're the same. We need a meaning and purpose to give us happiness, to make give us strength. So this is a very important area too. And then one of the other attitudes that is very prevalent, I see it in myself, and I think it's very common in humanity, is perfectionism. This is something we need to be aware of, because if we expect ourselves to be perfect, if we expect other people to be perfect, if we expect society to be perfect or our workplace to be perfect, what's going to happen? We're going to be suffering. We're going to have a lot of suffering. So this is a very important view or attitude for that we have to deal with if we're going to be happy, because perfectionism doesn't lead to happiness. It just leads to negativity. Not accepting reality as it is. This fighting with reality is a very common human situation. And we don't win, and we develop negative emotions with it. So that's very important. And very important too in life, the attitude that's very helpful is forgiveness too. Forgiveness is one of those emotions that can bring happiness, bring relief from difficult situations. We can forgive not only ourselves, this is very important. Sometimes we disappoint ourselves, other people, or other people do things that we find unacceptable. But to be able to forgive really frees us. You know, sometimes people feel like, I've got to hold on to this grudge. But there's no happiness in that, is there? There's no happiness. We're cultivating the weeds. So forgiveness is a very important part of our lives, because we live in an imperfect world, and this is going to be the way. We're imperfect, so why should we expect others to be perfect? That's a very important aspect or view or an attitude that we can have. And also another important one is to have patience with ourselves and others. Sometimes that is the best thing, the only thing we can do. But actually it's a quality that's very, very, very useful. If we can be patient, we can endure things that are not pleasant. This can be very, very useful. And it actually can lead to a sense of happiness because we've dealt with a situation by being patient. We haven't run away from it. That's the usual thing. And we can feel like, I dealt with that well, you know. Difficult, but I had patience. So these are, and today, in a fast-moving society, patience is rare. People are very, want everything instantly. So, and of course, important, just to finish off, important strategies for happiness are, of course, mindfulness. That's, I was mentioning mindfulness before, because so many problems that we have, where do they come from? Past and the future. If you're in the present, if you are here now, there are not too many problems. The seat might be uncomfortable, you might want to go to the toilet, or whatever, you might be thinking of this and that, but now is pretty okay. So it's the past and the future. When we think about the past, sometimes people will get depressed. When they think about the future, what happens? They can either get excited, have a lot of anticipation, or very commonly they get a lot of fear and anxiety thinking about. So these two things, you know, once you're in the present moment, no big problems actually, no big problems. So it's very useful to use mindfulness to be in the present moment and to use it in your everyday life too. I often use just a reference point for mindfulness. It can be, you know, just the touch of the breath, awareness of the breath here, or the touch of the fingers, whatever, sitting on the seat. Just a reference point during the day, during the situation. And just come back to that. And when we come back to it, we can be really present. And this is very useful for reducing hindrances, but also being, as I say, being present. The important thing with mindfulness too is that it encourages us to do one thing at a time. One thing. Give our attention to whatever we're doing now. Very common in the workplace now, multitasking. I think in Sri Lanka too it's very common. You know, doing 10 things at once. But how good can that be? Because the attention's not, you know, spread over many things at one time, as it were. So with mindfulness, giving 100%, as Ajahn Brahm would say, to what we're doing is very, very, it's efficient, actually very useful. And then doing one thing after the other, not many things at once. And also, as I mentioned with meditation, the emphasis on the psychology of meditation is happiness. So this is an important part of meditation, that we develop a gladness we have, bring up gladness like we've done with gratitude, and that can develop into like a joy, a much more intense emotion, and then from that we can develop tranquility of the body and the mind becomes really peaceful. And when the body and mind are very peaceful, the body sort of disappears, the mind hasn't got any thoughts, then happiness comes up. This is what we want, happiness. And then from happiness, then the mind can become one-pointed. It can be very still, it can be very, very peaceful and deep. So this is the, and then it can allow us to develop very deep wisdom as well. So this is an important aspect of meditation too. It takes mindfulness a little bit further, actually. So I would like to just finish with a story that brings some of these points together. You probably, I don't know if you've heard Ajahn Brahm tell the story of the Emperor's Three Questions. Probably have, no? Anyway, I will tell it. It's slightly different from Ajahn Brahm's, actually. So, but it's... There was once, this is a story that a Russian writer wrote, actually Leo Tolstoy, I don't know if you've heard of him, And it's a great story, it's a really good story. And there was once this emperor, and he was quite a thinker, he contemplated life. And he distilled his questions about life, about the meaning and purpose of life, into three questions. The first question was, what is the most important time? And the second question was, who is the most important person? And the third question was, what is the most important thing to do? And so he offered a reward for anyone who could answer these questions. Many people came and they gave some very clever answers, but he wasn't satisfied with any of these answers. And he'd heard of this hermit, this hermit, wise hermit, who lived on a mountain in a hut. And so he decided he would go and ask this hermit these three questions and see what his answers were. And so he went with his bodyguard to the mountain. He left the bodyguard at the bottom of the mountain, and disguised as a peasant, he went up to where the hermit lived in this hut. And he came there, and the hermit was digging his vegetable patch, his vegetable garden. And so he immediately said to him, you know, I want to ask you these three questions. And he asked the three questions, and the hermit was silent. He didn't answer. And the emperor was standing there, and he was, after a time he thought, well, I might as well dig the garden too. So he took over from digging the garden and let the hermit rest. And he thought, well, after I've done this, and then I can ask the three questions. He finished digging the garden, and then he was ready to ask the three questions. And then this man appeared, who rushed into the hermit's hut, and he was wounded and he was bleeding. And immediately the emperor, he got some water to wash the wounds and put some cloth on it to stop the bleeding, and he helped this man in this way. And this went on for quite a while, and eventually the man went to sleep. And the next morning he was a lot better, this man that had been wounded. And then the man confessed to the emperor the reason he was wounded, the reason he was bleeding. The bodyguard at the bottom of the mountain had intercepted him. This man was going to kill the emperor. He was going to assassinate the emperor. And he confessed that. And then the emperor forgave him for that, forgave him. And then the man, he was sufficiently well, he went off into the forest down the mountain. And then the emperor thought, well, it's the next morning, I can ask the three questions. So he says to the hermit, the three questions. And the hermit said, you've already been answered. And the emperor said, what do you mean, already been answered? He said, well, he said, he said, when you were helping me dig the garden, when you were helping that man who had the wounds, was bleeding, he said, this is the answer to the first question. The most important time, now. So that was the answer to the first question. And he said, when you were digging the garden and you were helping this wounded man, that was the answer to the second question. Who is the most important person? And he said, the person you are with. Ajahn Brahm also says, the person you are with when you are on your own is yourself. So that's the most important person then. And he said, the third question, he said, when you were digging the garden and you were helping this man, he said, then that was the answer to the third question. The most important thing to do is to do good or to care. This is the most important thing. So that was the three answers to the emperor's question, and he was very satisfied with those answers, and they were very practical. Very practical answers. He'd seen them, he'd actually experienced them himself. So I hope we can keep that in mind, that the most important time is now, most important time, person is the person you're with, and that can be yourself as well. That's a very important person, actually. quite often, if we look after ourselves, then other people benefit from that, actually. They will benefit from it. And then the third thing too, the most important thing to do is to do good or to care. This is very important. So those are things that can lead to our happiness and well-being. So I hope this has been of use to you, and that we can all experience more happiness and more success in our lives. I also remember a saying that Ajahn Brahm said, that it isn't success that creates happiness, it's happiness that creates success. And I think what that means is that what we want from success is happiness, isn't it? Once we have happiness, that is success. So I think I wish for all of us that we develop the causes and conditions for happiness here and now, the wisdom too, and that this gives meaning and purpose to our lives as well. So now I think there's not as much time as I would like, but if you would like to ask, if you have any comments about your experiences from the meditation, or any comments about the talk, questions, you're welcome. Yes, yes, certainly.
About forgiveness.
Forgiveness, yes.
We understand it intellectually.
Mm, mm.
How do you cultivate the feeling of forgiveness?
Forgiveness, how do you...
Situation?
Right, right. How do you cultivate the feeling of forgiveness for another person or another situation? For me, you know, it's very helpful if I think of myself, that I have perhaps done this or I have said something like this myself, and then I can understand. A big part of forgiveness is actually able to understand where the person's coming from. If you can, then it's easy to forgive, easier to forgive. You know, because my similar is not so good, often there are situations where I misunderstand, you know, and once I understand, then it drops away completely, you know. I think, oh, right, that was not a problem at all. And it's the same with forgiveness. If we can bring understanding to the situation, to bring compassion too, because often when people do and say things that are hurtful, harmful, they are not really happy themselves. And this is where I find it, compassion is very useful. You know, that I think if they said that and did that, they can't be in a very good state, a very good mind state. So this is how I would approach forgiveness. Forgiveness is important for ourselves and for others. Very, very important, yes. And forgiveness is also like a part of Maitri in a way too, you know. It's a part of Maitri. And a lot of forgiveness comes from the fact that we realize too, do I want to hold on to this feeling? Do I want to carry this feeling on? Is it doing me any good? Is it doing the other person any good, you know? So this helps me to forgive, because forgiveness is letting go of a negative, like a grudge, and being able to just put it down, really to let it rest. Yeah, yes. Because we realize too, people are not perfect. We're not perfect, they're not perfect. So it can sometimes people say, you know, some things are unforgivable, you know, unforgivable. But I read a wonderful article about a woman who was in a concentration camp, and she and her sister were identical twins. And because they're identical twins, when they came to the concentration camp, they put them aside for medical experiments. And both these sisters, they had, you know, injected with bacteria and had terrible, you know, illnesses and things like that. But they could keep going. But the amazing thing is, the one that was still alive and going, last year, well, I think it was last year, a year before, she could forgive the concentration camp doctors, the Nazis. She could actually forget. These are, you know, a totally difficult thing to forgive, but she could forgive, and actually met, you know, some doctors that had worked in the concentration camps. Not that she knew these ones, particular doctors. So, you know, if she can forgive, but she said one thing I liked very much. She said, "Forgiveness is the ultimate revenge." I liked that. I thought that's true. I mean, it sounds a bit negative, doesn't it? But it frees you. But it is, you know, if you want revenge, then forgive somebody. That's the last thing they probably want. So, and she could do it, you know, for a situation like living in being in a concentration camp, and you know, suffering terrible illnesses and so on. Yeah. So, and she had this. She was really amazing. Obviously, a very strong person too, because she had this determination. She had a very. She was really, really sick because they injected her with some terrible virus or bacteria, and what kept her going was. She thought, if I die, they will kill my sister, because then it's not the identical twins anymore. And so she kept going, and she managed to survive, actually, just by sheer, you know, willpower, mind power. So, you know, if someone like that can forgive, I think we can forgive, you know. So it's so I hope that helps a little bit anyway. There we are. So I think, thank you for that. And now I think we can perhaps finish the evening, or the official part of the evening. And I hope you found this evening useful, and you take away something to think about, contemplate. I always say after my talks, don't believe what I say. Investigate it, you know, see if it brings up something interesting for you, a different angle, good. That's the whole point. That's a purpose. So I wish you well for the pursuit of happiness here and now. So, well, sadhu, sadhu, thank you. Yeah, good.